Hello and welcome to episode 546 of Contending at the Water Cooler. I am your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler, light up a cig, and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Wait, Joey, you gave up smoking? Well, let's go with you first.
Yes. Hi, I'm Joey Moser, and what are you going to do, charge me with smoking? You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin. You can find me everywhere at Hey Dude Meg.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. And yes, I do have that magna cum laude vagina on the brain. It's done fried up the brain.
The fuck of the century.
The fuck of the century. The fuck of the century. Yes, in case you haven't noticed, we are here to slash something off of the list of things that Megan has never seen. It is Paul Verhoeven's erotic thriller. Well, I'll just say classic erotic thriller.
Like erotic? I mean, it is erotic. Yes.
Classic erotic thriller. Basic Instinct.
Movie.
It's still a movie. Well, yeah, which, for better or for worse, it is an iconic film of the 90s. I was thinking about, like, all of the movies that it inspired across the 90s, from direct ripoffs like Sliver to Jade to like even Disclosure, like something that has prestige behind it. Everything, you know, not just the presence of Michael Douglas, but just this, the tone, the editing, the even the scores are, you know, just
the Oscar nominated score.
The best thing about the film, hands down by far. Sharon Stone's great in it, but the score is amazing. All of these things we're going to talk about because we are slashing this off of Megan's never seen list. Now she has popped her cherry with the Basic Instinct. Now she is no longer a Basic Instinct virgin.
Yes, so. I'm not anymore. Yeah.
Congratulations. Welcome.
Thank you.
She's like, I regret every decision about this.
So this week, let's just hop right into it. And Megan, since this is your show, what did you think of Basic Instinct?
Okay. I think I had read, like, I think because I had not seen it years and years ago, I was curious, like, what happens in this movie? And for some reason, I thought something would happen to Michael Douglas, which we can talk, we can debate about whether something does. But, I knew it was erotic. I knew it was like, I knew the scene where she like shows her hoo-ha was a big deal and has been parodied so many times. I didn't realize how much it was like, okay, did you think this is kind of like a Vertigo type of like knockoff too, with San Francisco and the like the women that look alike, but it's kind of a red herring, I guess. Also like Twin Peaks-esque. There's a lot going on, but I found myself rooting for Catherine Tremell the entire time. Like, I'm like, yeah, girl, do it, kill everybody, do it. And I'm just like, oh my god, it's so obvious, you stupid fucking moron men. Like, it's so clear what's happening. And I just kept thinking, I'm really enjoying it because I do like seeing this woman kind of just play with the puppet strings the whole time. And because she's hot, Michael Douglas is just like, she couldn't have done this. No, she couldn't have done this. But it also is like very much a product of the time where like, oh, she's bisexual, that's so weird. And like, oh, Jeannie Triplehorn is bisexual too. And like, oh, like, there were a lot of things. And well, we can talk about also what happens between Michael Douglas and Jeannie Triplehorn. But overall, I enjoyed it, and I really just wanted all of the men in it to get, except for Gus. I really liked Gus. I really liked him, but I really wanted Michael Douglas to die. I wanted that revenge feeling for like Fatal Attraction, that you want him to die in that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to feel that in this, and I was left a little unsatisfied.
That's interesting that you say the revenge factor, because I was on Letterboxd today kind of looking at what, you know, just average viewers today, modern audiences, look, you know, think about Basic Instinct, because it's obviously a film that I saw on like opening day back in 1992. but you know, I just, you know, the only thing that you really hear about it in the modern conversation are two things, and you've mentioned both of them: the Sharon Stone scene with the lack of underwear, and the LGBTQ controversy surrounding it. But you know, it's so interesting to revisit it. And as again, I looked at Letterboxd, there was someone who mentioned that this was almost like Vertigo, but the revenge part of Vertigo, where the doppelganger women, or the, you know, she gets revenge against the men that cause her death in Vertigo. And that, you know, that it's very tenuous ties to it, but it is Hitchcockian. It is, it does have that, you know, Jerry Goldsmith's score is reminiscent of Bernard Herrmann's score for Vertigo. It does take place in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So there are themes, and Sharon Stone is the Hitchcock blonde. I would have loved to have seen what Alfred Hitchcock would have done
with the
icy blonde there.
She is great in this too. I also just felt like the whole time, like everything she's doing, it felt like that clip from The Simpsons where, like, did they kill everyone? Yeah, they killed everyone. Like, yeah. Like, oh, she has a friend that's a murderer. Oh, she can't be. No, she is. Like, it's just like everything's like,
So, not that people don't know what Basic Instinct is, but let me just back up a little bit and say the film opens with a man and a woman having sex in bed, and someone commented online, it was so funny that how they're always like, ooh, sadomasochistic sex, and it's really just because, you know, she likes to tie up her victims with a white Hermes silk scarf. But, you know, the woman is on top, she ties him up, and just as they're about to climax, she reaches out back and grabs an ice pick and brutally stabs this man. I mean, it's at one point I paused it. I paused it, and there's a shot that of the ice pick going through the guy's nose to the side because his head is turned, and it's like going straight through there. And I sent that to Joey. I'm like, I don't remember seeing this. And that was before you could, you know, so accurately pause things, I guess. So the rest of the film is basically introduces Sharon Stone as Catherine Tremell. She is an author. She may or may not be a murderer. She has lots of female friends who definitely were murderers and are also lesbians.
We don't know if Hazel is, right? We don't know.
No, we don't. We should talk about Hazel, but we'll put a pin on that one for a second. Okay. And then, of course, Michael Douglas is the troubled San Francisco police detective who has a shady past of his own. He was
he shot two tourists.
Yeah, he shot two tourists, and he was held up on in internal affairs. He definitely got off on that one, even though he was high on cocaine when he shot.
Oh, he gets off a lot in this movie.
He got off before he gets off. That is a line from the movie. But, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That is a line. You're right.
In my opinion, Basic Instinct wants to be this sort of mystery erotic thriller. And I actually don't find it to be that much of a thriller because, you know, spoiler alert, and I don't know if you can spoil a nearly 40-year-old movie, but it is always apparent to me that she is the killer. Like, she is, you know, as you said, the puppeteer pulling the strings the entire time. They don't even really try to give you any other scenario until the last quarter of the film, where all of a sudden all this evidence gets pushed onto Gene Triplehorn, and, you know, all of a sudden they say, oh yeah, no, it's Gene Triplehorn all along, which doesn't fly at all. But
no,
it's really a film, I would call it more of an erotic, I mean, there are thrilling aspects of it, but I would call it more of a drama about this woman who is just fucking with everybody around her, and it's so fantastic every single way from that aspect.
I don't think I've seen an ice pick used ever again.
I was like, what is the ice pick budget on this film?
I know, it was just sort of like
a fucking ice pick.
Came from Kmart for $1.75.
That's right.
Well, can you like imagine like the creator of the ice pick? It was like, finally, it's gonna get its due, because it's just like the way that she plays in everybody's face the whole fucking movie. Mm-hmm. It's just like when he goes over to her house and she pulls out a giant block of ice and she's like, da, 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 da. And he's like staring at her like, what? I like the jacket edges. It's sort of like she may as well just be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I have all this blood on my hands. Let me wash it off.
She's totally fucking with him the whole time. I'm like, doesn't anybody in this movie just take a block of ice and go like this? Like I do.
Well, there's also like the, I don't know, like the, it just made me think about like how, I sent both of you the same message. I was like, wow, Michael Douglas, I forgot how stupid his character is. And also he just like throws away a lot of stuff real easy, but even before he sleeps with Sharon Stone, he's just like, yeah, I'm gonna start smoking again. Yeah, I'm just gonna start doing drugs. Like, yeah, I'm gonna start drinking.
Drinking, yep.
The film should have been called Crazy Pussy, because that's what he falls for.
Like, that's the French title.
Yeah, crazy, like, because he is just a magnet for it. Like, even Jeannie Trevor is fucking crazy, too. I need to know more about his wife. I need to know more about his wife.
Yeah. But. I remember, I love Sharon Stone, like, period. I've loved her ever since I was way too young to rent movies like this from the video store. I fell down, I was like 13 when I fell down like a Sharon Stone rabbit hole. I watched Sliver.
Was it Casino?
I watched this. I watched
Cold Creek Manor.
Oh, that's a horrible movie.
I know, but I think you did. You were excited for that.
Quick and the Dead. I watched
because of Sharon Stone. Like,
don't forget the Quick and the Dead.
Diabolique.
Diabolique. I love Diabolique. That is the funniest movie.
I watched that movie with my mom in a hotel on vacation. Fucked up. I just think I was telling Clarence that I think this is probably like one of the most 90s movies ever made.
I would agree with that.
Like,
I wrote down peak 90s, like, was the peak time for dancing on tables at clubs. I don't think anybody has done that past 1999. Like, I feel like if you go to a club in the 90s, everybody, there's elevation. Now everybody's just flat.
The first person who got on a table in the 90s was like, I'm a peak. I will say also, maybe we were talking about this before we started recording, but like, I think the eroticism and I think the sexiness of it, I think it decreases as the movie gets on.
Yeah.
Like when they're having sex at the end, she's sitting in a rocking chair, like on top of him. She's like, oh yeah.
And because she's her interest. Bizarre.
Yeah. She's like, she like stretches way back when she gets fucked up. And I'm
that's because she's not in the mood for like, is that when she's after she's had the emotional breakdown about everybody around her dies?
No, she always, even in the opening scene, she's just like way back. She's like on her roller coaster. I mean, I know she's got to grab that ice pick, but she's,
it's a big bed. Maybe she thought she lost it. Wouldn't it be funny? She's like, where is it? I can't find it.
She's like one of those things that they put in parking from Us. Nope,
you're absolutely right. She looks like that, and I'm just kind of like, every time she would have sex with Michael Douglas, I'm just like, how do you not know that she's evil? Like, how are you not like in on this?
I actually also wondered, like, is it less obvious because you don't have, like, you actually have to do, like, real police work, and you can't just Google this shit on your phone.
Right. I do like him running around all the time, just being like, well, Jeannie Triplehorn has a, you know, she went to Berkeley. I'm going to look up these records. And it's like, it's not Lisa Oberman, it's Hoberman. Well, okay, I got to go back to
the I like that the registrar's office is very crowded in that scene when he's there. Yeah, I imagine he's like pushing undergrads out of the way. Be like, yeah. I got a hot piece of ass back there. I got to make sure it's not going to stab me.
This is also like peak Michael. This okay, I Michael Douglas. I am not a Michael Douglas fan, not by any means. Like, actually, I've tried watching Romancing the Stone because I feel like that is a movie that I would love. But he just, maybe that's another one we do. We'll just do every Michael Douglas movie because I don't like Michael Douglas. But I am just so turned off by him because of movies like this, movies like Fatal Attraction, where I feel like he always has to be like the big man, the guy who he wins. He always wins, and it bugs me. And do you, well, I do want to ask, do you think he wins in the end? What do you make of the ending? Not to jump ahead, but I do have questions about the ending.
Joey.
Well, I mean, he's gonna die.
Okay, is he? Then why
That's what
aren't
I
we?
expect under her bed. She's
But I didn't
leaving
know
then.
she was like, if she was like, oh no, I do want to settle down with him.
No.
No, she absolutely does not want to settle down with him. I think she just, at that moment, did not want to see more death.
I need a break.
But she doesn't have anything. I mean, but I also think that she doesn't have anything to gain from killing him at that
No.
point.
Except that she could be close that chapter of her book and be like, I do like this idea that she's somebody that, like, you know, I'm gonna live my book. I'm gonna write everything that happens. I'm gonna kill you. And then no one will think the lesser of me. Like, and nobody knows. But I kind of wondered if they were trying to say, oh, she's changed and she actually likes him and they're gonna be kind of evil together.
I don't think that at all. I
No.
think it's
Well, then why
no.
can't we see him die? Like, that's what I kept waiting for. I
Because
wanted to
it's Michael
see him.
Douglas.
I know, and that's why I don't like him. Because I'm like, why can't we see you die on a screen? Like, I don't want to see him die in real life. He's probably, well, you know, I don't know what he's like, but I don't wish that on him. But in his movies, his characters, like, why can't we see
You're
that?
really burned from Fatal Attraction. I think
I
that's
am. I'm so burned from Fatal Attraction.
We do see him die in his in one of his best performances, which is Falling Down.
Oh yes, I've
I
never
love Falling
seen
Down.
that
That's a
movie
great
because
movie, and
that's like my dad's favorite movie. He
that's
loves
his
that movie.
unsung performance. That's what he should have been nominated for an Oscar for.
Yeah.
He's also good in Wonder Boys, but I like
True.
Falling Down a lot.
I think that there is this, and this is from the benefit of time and how we view different things and how things, I mean, this was written by
Joe
Joe
Etterhaus.
Esterhaus, who is like, I don't care. Sort of, he looks like a sleazeball. Sorry. He's gonna unsubscribe to our podcast. I just remember reading a lot of stuff like when Showgirls was going on that I was like, oh, it's really icky. But I think that in a way, there's something about this sort of like male, like, what am I trying to say here? The sort of like, I'm a man, and like, this woman's a lesbian, and she likes sleeping with women, but almost like he almost, what's the right word? He almost like tames her in a way, like Taming of the
I
Murderous
got that
Lesbian
too.
Shrew.
Yeah,
And
like that
it's,
he's, yeah, I
yeah.
felt that too.
And it's sort of like, I was just like, wow, bro, you told her you loved her like real quick. That pussy must be fire. Like,
I
Julia,
know. It's the
it's
fuck of the
like,
century.
that pussy pops for him, but I think it really popped for Roxy. I think she really liked Roxy.
Oh my God, it's one battle after another. He's Sean Penn and Roxy is
Leo.
Leonardo DiCaprio. I don't know. There's a whole thing in there about how, like, I'm sure someone has written it about how he, like, struts into that club and sees them doing coke in the bathroom. And I assume it's a gay club because no, it is. Because people are having fun. And
That the dancing, some of the
the dancing,
dancing
the
was like,
elevated dancing. I gotta
yes.
say, the note that I wrote down after watching that scene in large letters, you can't see it. It says, I don't want to live in a world where straight people go have good sex after going to that good of a time at a gay club. That's the most offensive thing.
Okay. Let's talk about that club scene, because it is the single worst scene in the film, in my opinion. It is, you could completely cut that out, and you would change very little about the film. From the point that, you know, the moment that he walks in wearing the Ross Geller V-neck sweater, going to the club, and you know, to the fact that they are all dancing to a song that is very clearly not the one that is played on the soundtrack. The beat isn't right. They don't, or they were just dancing around and they were like, you know, just do club movements, and that was what they played. Yes, there's the sweater. To the fact that the sound in this sequence is like three layers. It's the club music, it is the people talking, not people, they're just people talking in the background, that we don't see these people talking, we don't know who they are in this very loud club, but there's just people talking. And then there's the main audio, the dialogue track, which is not these, it's like these things are three completely separate entities that are not blended in any way, shape, or form, and it just doesn't work at all. There's that row of lights that just like rotates and comes like down into the audience.
There was like
comes
there
within
like
inches
a,
of killing people.
There was like
people.
A traveling light panel. Like, what was that?
And Joey, you will most definitely recognize this: Roxy doing a pre-Nomi Malone dance number where she's like, when she gets mad, she's like, you know, that whole like, fuck you, I'm doing this with my dance.
If I also thought it was interesting.
If you watch Roxy dance, Roxy is doing like cardio from a workout video.
It did look very much inspired by The Grind. I kept thinking, like,
it literally was this. She was going like this.
Yeah. And then if we follow her into the men's room, though, which I also thought was like commentary, like, oh.
But there's like, there's all kinds of crowds. And I don't think it's a gay club, because were there men on men in the men's room?
I thought maybe it was a lesbian club. There were, with gays hanging out there. I don't know if that's a thing.
I don't think gay men will go to a lesbian bar.
I was going
to
say, I don't think that doesn't, even that them. Isn't, that is not, that's
no,
not
I,
right.
No, I still think the most, like I said, I think the most unbelievable thing is that straight people would go fuck that hardcore after being at a gay club. I don't know. I know it's the early 90s, but I feel like, I don't know. I feel like that much coke in a bathroom, that's a gay bar.
Mm. San Francisco.
San Francisco.
Yeah. Can we talk about why does he have such rough sex? Like, do you think that is a part of his thing, or is that something that Catherine Tremell brings out in him? Because I do want to, like, another thing that this movie could not get away with today was him basically raping Jeannie Triplehorn.
Oh, he 100% rapes her. Yes.
Totally rapes her.
And I thought, like, as I was watching, like, even like right away, he's just kind of rough, and she looks like she's kind of not sure, like, whether, I didn't know if that was like their thing, or did Catherine bring that out in him, and that was like a new thing he was trying.
She says to him afterwards, "You've never done it like that before."
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember that.
I definitely think it's Catherine Tremell unleashing the rage beast within him.
Okay. He's a piece of shit, and I was really mad at that part. And I was also mad at Jeannie, though, for also just being like just letting him, you're a doctor. Like,
well, that's why she has to die, though, because the whole movie's about men are stupid and can be so easily controlled, and yet she balances between that male female world, and it's almost like she tries to play in that environment and cater to and allow herself to be subjugated to these idiotic men, and that's why she has to die.
It is so weird that she and Sharon Stone never even share a scene together, right?
No.
That's so bizarre, except that weird like college yearbook picture with her being like, like, who thought this is it? This is the one. Like, put it in the book.
You can't tell me that single white female was not pulled from this movie.
Oh, yeah.
No, if single white female was being made right around
was
the time.
Was it? Okay, well, then never mind.
Single white female came out in like August of 92. Single white female is based on a book, though, too.
Is it?
Well, then that is a pure coinky-dink.
But I think Sharon Stone's whole career has also been like trying to replicate this in so many ways. Like, they've given her a lot of roles of like the the sexy femme fatale, I think, like at least in the 90s.
Yeah, let me pull up her IMDb.
I do think, aside from Casino, she was basically punished for this film and sort of put in a, you know, for lack of a better term, a whore ghetto in terms of what she, in terms of her actress style. I mean, I'm not saying that she is that, but I think that that is what Hollywood did to her.
Well, I think the reason why I've always loved her is that she's, and I know this is such an overused term, but she's so like unapologetic about being so, afraid of her own sexuality. She's so fucking smart, and there's never really in any movie, in my opinion, where she can't go to toe-to-toe with anybody. That's why I've always just sort of, I'm like, she, it's fierce. Like, I don't know. Like,
well, I think another problem that she has as an actress is that she presents as the smartest person in the room. And there's no man who can go toe-to-toe with her, or in her prime, there's no man that could go toe-to-toe with her. Michael Douglas was supposed to, but I don't think in any way, shape, or form he is an equal opponent for her in this film.
No, I think she, the character, and she, the actor, I think she runs circles around him.
Yeah.
Like laps around him, because she's so like, she can do this thing where she can play the scene so serious, but then also be like really campy all at one time. And he is playing it as like, you know, a grizzled.
But ride me, man.
Just like, ugh. Well,
I mean, she's given dialogue like, I like rough edges.
Yeah.
And I mean, she just like throws that off of the tip of her tongue, like the cat that just ate the cream. Like she knows how to purr this stuff. That's what that her dialogue delivery is, a purr throughout the entire film. And yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
Do you think also that like the popularity of this film also stemmed from like, this is around the time I kept thinking of Madonna. You know, Madonna has always fascinated people with her sexuality and stuff. And then there's this blonde who I feel like this is also just kind of like in the zeitgeist of like, this is like peak Madonna time. This is probably what, post Like a Prayer. And I kept getting Madonna vibes, and how that in that time period, I feel like we were really obsessed with the blonde that was, you know, hypersexual, and we didn't know what to do with it. And I felt like she kind of played into that too.
Well, that's so funny that, so this came out in 1992, like, I don't
the
remember.
The Coffee Table Book came out in 1992 as well.
Well, Erotica also came out in the fall of 1992.
So did the Coffee Table Book.
Yeah. I mean, before that, I mean, she did some of her singles. She had Madonna had just released Justify My Love in 1990, Vogue in 1990. So, you know, Express Yourself in 89, I think. But I don't know. There's like a, I don't know. I don't think up until this point that there, because like theaters didn't allow this up until this moment, that like she could like be a classic femme fatale, but she could also just be like, I'm horny and I'm gonna, like, she could really, like, you know, put the pedal to the floor.
Madonna or Sharon Stone?
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, Sharon Stone. But I mean, also Madonna. Madonna yeah. doesn't give two fucks what you think about her.
And I think that's what the vibe, though, that like our culture was fascinated with that. And this played into that like, oh, we've got this. And imagine if she's a killer and she's super smart and writes books and really flips the entire, like, it makes men look so stupid, which I didn't know if that was the read at the time too. Are we just like, oh, poor Michael Douglas? Or was it always like, no, he's an idiot?
Well, Michael Douglas was a straight up movie star at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
oh, yeah.
I was reading stuff about how he didn't like that she got cast because she wasn't a big enough name for the movie. I saw a quote where he basically said, like, I don't want to be alone up there on screen. Like, I have to also, like, I have to have, like, a partner, essentially. And I was like, she's the one who's naked, and she's the one who's, you know.
The most interesting character in the film.
Yeah. And I think that, I don't know. I think that there is, this is also, more reinforced with, like, how we probably viewed sex in media and stuff like that. That it's also just, like, well, she can't just be like a really sexy, confident, powerful woman. She also just might be a murderer. Something might be wrong with her. Of course, she's like this. Right. She's bisexual. She sleeps with women. So clearly, I mean, that's a whole other conversation about like how gay people didn't like it because there's been so many tropes about gay people being the villain and something wrong with them, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I think some of the stuff that you read that he said about it, again, product of the time, it's also just like, oh, you sound like us.
Well, I could see why lesbians would not like it, because I don't think lesbians or bisexuals are depicted very well in this, because it is like very just like, oh, we're just on each other all the time, like Roxy likes to watch. It's just like, and there's like no substance at all to it, and that is only what we see Roxy doing, is either like like peeking out.
Like, well, that, and also once Roxy is scorned, she goes into a murderous rage, well, too, and then she deserves to die.
That's the grossest thing about the screenplay, is that Roxy watches all the time, but something in Michael Douglas stirred something in right. Sharon Stone so deep that it drove Roxy insane with jealousy, right. And she had to try to kill him and then ultimately die. One thing before we leave the casting, I do want to mention Michael Douglas initially recommended Kim Basinger for the role, but she turned it down. He wanted Julia Roberts, Greta Scacchi, and Meg Ryan, but they all turned it down. They offered it to Deborah Winger, Michelle Pfeiffer, Geno Davis, Kathleen Turner, Kelly Lynch, Ellen Barkin, and Marielle Hemingway. All turned it down. They considered Demi Moore. She also turned it down. And then, of course, then they finally went with Sharon Stone.
Sharon Stone is perfect for this. Like,
absolutely. There's none of those actresses could have carried this off.
No.
With,
yes, there's like a confidence she carries too that you can tell she does not give a fuck, and it's like, it's intoxicating. You want to, like, I'm like, I want to be her.
Well, that's what
I
makes
kill Michael Douglas.
That's what makes this scene and your background the best scene in the film, because
yes.
It is the scene where it's actually really brilliantly made, the way that it's laid out and the way that it's shot. I got a screenshot from the scene for the post, main graphic for the post. And I just love how it's laid out, and she's in this stark white dress, and she is angelically dressed, and they're all sweating and swarthy and in these big suits. And they're like trying to pounce on her, and they've got this moody lighting that makes it look like she's under the spotlight. But of course she carries it off so well. And then the reveal, which we can, you know, let's talk about the reveal. I do have a theory on sort of why this is in the film. And I talk about the reveal where Sharon Stone uncrosses her legs and she's not wearing underwear, and the camera very clearly shows it. Then, you know, she goes, "It's nice," which is such a fine moment. But what do you, Megan, what do you think about that scene after hearing it about it and seeing it parodied so many times? How do you think it works in the film?
I mean, I think it just shows that she has power. The pussy has power. Like, she's controlling them with it. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all fixated on her, and they all know. I mean, I thought it was like kind of brilliant, but I didn't want to look too close, though. I'm just like, I don't want to see her. No, I don't want to see that. But it's like, it's Sharon. But I found it very, they just all look like bumbling idiots. And I really enjoyed the fact that she's just sitting there like, okay, you get like lays out, like, basically they're asking her questions about like, everything. And she's like, oh, how could I have done it? It's like, clearly she did do it. And they're all just idiots.
The fact that early, the, I'm going to say this, and I'll tell you my favorite part of the whole scene, but she does, when the part in the scene where Michael Douglas says, I thought you liked when men use their hands, and she says, no, I liked when Johnny used his hands. Just like, it's like, oh, you're not listening. You're too
Yeah.
distracted by how hot I am. It's a product of what the scene looks like. But that scene is amazing. How the camera moves in on her in a couple of times is really cool. I think the really great epitome of how she can play with them is even before she sits down and they're asking her about why she ha doesn't have a lawyer, and she says, someone says, well, I told them that you have nothing to hide. And the way she says, she says back to them, it's the lightness in her voice when she says, I have nothing to hide. It's so
Yeah.
like, I was like, oh, you bitches. I've seen this movie a million times. I was like, you guys are so fucked.
Yes.
No idea what you're in for. I
So
love it.
as everybody knows, there's been a lot of controversy over the last 10 years about the revelation of that scene and whether or not Sharon Stone had felt like she had agency in that moment, because he can, according to her, the story is that Paul Verhoeven told her, you can't wear underwear under this dress because the dress is so tight, they'll see the lines. So she agreed to remove her underwear. And then he had a camera and she's like, we're not going to be filming that. He's like, no. And then, of course, it ended up in the film. And ironically, it gave the movie, like, the sex scenes are the sex scenes. They're very robotic. They're not sexy at all. There's
Just
no.
kind of like
Yeah, they're violent. They're violent and nasty and aggressive, and it just all again and again and again and again. It's just like little tiny deaths every single time. This underwear scene, or the lack of underwear scene, the crotch shot, made this film what it was.
I think it's so interesting too that we talk about her not having agency in the scene, but her character does.
Yes.
And that's what's such a, it's unfortunate that she says that she didn't know, because it is such a powerful moment for the character. And I do feel bad for her that.
Well, I think that's why people have a hard time believing her, because she is not Catherine Tramell, but it that's it just doesn't, the idea that she didn't have agency and understanding what was going to be shot, and the way that she's playing Catherine Tramell don't seem to agree with
Yeah.
each other. But I think honestly, Paul Verhoeven edited this scene and realized that it would have been flat without that crescendo, that climax, if you will, of that
Yeah.
shot to nail it. And I mean, it is a magical, perfect, beautiful, wonderful sequence because of it.
Yeah.
And I'm not being
Yeah.
like, man, straight man trying to be gross because he sees vagina, but it's just,
No, I know what you mean
it's
though,
it, it
because
what the power that it shows,
yes.
how she completely devolves them into puddled masses on the floor. It's just perfect.
Yeah, I agree.
There's also like the way, I think if you just look at the image after she crosses her legs, and it's the way that she moves. This is even like separate from, you could take that section out. The uncrossing of the legs. She does something else with her legs right after, and she says the line, it's nice. She like moves her leg like on top of her leg, and it is so like it's hot. Like it's sort of like the
Well, she crosses her leg like a man would, like a traditional, right? Doesn't she do that? She
No,
puts
she
it,
crosses them at the knee.
oh, at the knee. Okay.
Well, like, so it's after the cross happens. She uncrosses her
Okay.
legs, then recrosses them. The shot
Oh,
happens, and then it
yeah.
cuts
Okay.
to, I think it cuts to Wayne Knight realizing that he's like, vagina, and then right there in Clarence's screen, and then I don't remember the line is, if there's any dialogue between it, and she says it's nice, and she like rubs her knees together almost. She
That's
like
the
lifts her
scene
leg.
Megan has. That's what that, yeah, that's, yeah, that's it. Where she almost like rubs her legs together like a cricket or something like that.
Logman.
It's
bisexual.
The film received two Oscar nominations. Sadly, one of them wasn't for Sharon Stone for Best Actress. She did get a Golden Globe nomination. She got a couple of Critics so Group nominations, which was, yeah, it was a very Globesy thing to do. Absolutely. Get Sharon Stone to the Golden Globes. But the score, Jerry Goldsmith's score, iconic in every way. And it is, a lot of people think it is his best work. Because it was, and he considers it one of his best works, because it was so challenging to try to find a tone for this film.
Yeah, that would be hard because you are kind of like being between camp and drama and bumbling idiots, cops, idiot cops, or even just like the humor in it from Gus. That would be hard.
But I love how she's represented with that. That I had to look up to see what the instrument was because I'm not a music person, but the trumpet. Where it's like that single trumpet, everything is like luscious strings in the background, and then there's that, you know, that one that, you know, oh god, I just love that. I mean, especially the beginning, the opening credits are just gorgeous. Like the, what is it, writhing bodies, what is it, water, you don't know because it all looks like it's filmed through stained glass, and it's just, and then the score. My favorite thing about the movie, as much as I love Sharon Stone's performance, it's that scores an all-timer.
Yeah. No, I noticed that too.
All right. Hazel. We got to talk about Hazel Dawkins.
Yes, let's talk about Hazel, yes.
Played by Dorothy Malone, who was a classic 1950s melodrama actor.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I didn't realize that. I know that name.
She was in the Douglas Sirk movie. No, she was in Douglas Sirk's movie, the one that Far From Heaven.
All That Heaven Allows.
Was it that one, or is it? I gotta look it up.
Oh, Written on the Wind.
Written on the Wind. Yes, yeah.
Oh,
she said Written on the Wind.
That her presence in this film has always mystified me, because, you know, we find out that Hazel Dawkins killed her family in the 50s. She's just another person who has gone over the edge. And Sharon Stone's author character, Catherine Tramell, wants to figure out, to understand that instinct from, you know. But I'm like, are they insinuating that they're lovers at some point? Like, I don't.
There is that weird scene where she shows up right after she's like, Sharon says to Michael Douglas, like, this is over now because, you know, I've done with my book.
Yeah.
And then she's just kind of there. And that is a weird, I didn't necessarily think they were together, but I don't know. I kind of thought they just understood each other, maybe.
She won an Oscar for Written in the Wind. Written on the Wind, excuse me. She was in Peyton Place, for God's sake.
Yes.
I had wondered, because we mainly see her from, like, we see her in a distance, like, when he's, like, doing police work, and, like, we see her outside her house, and then I feel like the ending is the time that we really see her, like, up close, and for some reason, I thought her hair looked different.
I thought her hair looked different, too. I was kind of like, is that Hazel?
Is that Hazel? Hazel!
Because we only seen her, like, far away, you're right.
Yeah, I'm on her IMDb right now, and it's kind of, like, almost sad that, like, there's, like, an old headshot of her, and then, like, the ad, the video that's next to it is, like, for a limited edition. Oh, my God, there's a limited edition of Basic Instinct with a limited edition collectible pen in the shape of an ice pick. I need this. it's kind of sad. She's had this, like, storied career, and I was like, remember when we saw her in the background, and she might be a lesbian?
This was her last movie.
Was it really?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Because she only died,
if I
like,
can find that on. Oh my god! It's on eBay for $10.
What?
Special edition.
I'm buying it right now. I hate myself.
As Amy Poehler would say, eBay, where the things you love find the way home to you. I'm misparaphrasing it, but she's got some eBay sponsorship that
and bought.
Yeah, good for you. Congratulations.
You bought it?
I bought it. It was $10.
Oh my God. I would have bought it for you. I
free
you...
shipping. I mean, I can cancel the order.
No, you should
spend me $10. Also, I think this is also the most 90s movie ever because a Bart Simpson keychain is a plot point.
Yes.
Isn't that insane?
That is. And I had forgotten that until and yet when she throws Jean Triplehorn angry throws everything in this. She's just smashing, she's constantly smashing things because she's a woman, she can't control her emotions. And
Jean Triplehorn, like, smash.
Why is there a Bart Simpson key?
Why didn't she just show him that she didn't have a gun? I'm just like, he wouldn't have shot you if you, like, just take your hands out of your pocket. It was weird that she was wearing Sharon's dress in that scene. Did you
Was
notice
she?
that? Yes.
No.
Going back.
She was wearing one of her dresses, that
I'm
one, because I
going
love that dress.
back.
You never noticed that?
No, I never did.
Yeah, she's wearing the dress that Sharon Stone is wearing in a previous scene.
Also, like, man, what did Jean Triplehorn do to anybody in this movie? She's raped. I mean, this,
raped.
I mean, to put it in, like, 2020s speak, like, this is a really good example of how you can take consent away. That's all I'm saying. Because she's into it, and then she says no, and then
right.
Then it just finishes.
Yeah.
He's
so rough with her too.
I remember any time that I would catch this movie on TV, it had the most awkward cuts because they were like, how do we splice the scene? Because her boobies are out for like
right.
the entire thing. And then basically it cuts to them laying on the floor. Don't know why they're laying on the floor. There's a long couch right there. And then she gets up and like her shirt keeps popping open, and then it would always, in the TV version, it would always cut to her and be like, "And get out!" And she slams the door.
The TV version, like, 45 minutes long.
It's pretty much brought to you by Kmart Ice Picks.
Well, another Hitchcock thing because I was watching on my laptop and I had it in widescreen, and there he's got her bent over the chair or something like that, and then like in the background it's almost like a rear window shot because there's another couple doing something across the street in the window.
I didn't know that. I have it playing like right now, even like the scenes where anytime that they go into her house the windows are completely open, you can see the
yes.
cityscape behind, which I find
yeah.
very interesting.
Yeah, but then I think the film really just, I think they, it devolves a little bit in the last quarter where it starts to wrap itself up with this very weird and all of a sudden hackneyed subplot about her backstory, about Jean Triplehorn's character's backstory, and the husband that died, and her changing her name, and having the, all of that.
And then Nielsen, how did Nielsen play into that? Was he with her? Why was he investigating?
I still to this day don't understand. He had that information a year before any of the events of this film
yeah.
happened. What was that about? I don't understand why. I mean, red herring, yes, but it.
Yeah. But was he like, well, she killed him. So, right. I mean,
who did?
all those deaths were Catherine Tremell killing all of them, right?
I assume so.
There's
no way to know.
It doesn't make any sense, a lot
no.
of it.
Wouldn't it be crazy?
Yeah. And it would make more sense to me if she and Jean Triplehorn were together on it. And like, because why was she wearing her shirt? Why was she wearing her dress, her shirt dress? Because I love that shirt dress. I was like, where'd she get that? And then I was like, oh, she's wearing
it. Does her trench coat come open?
Jeans?
Yes.
In the end, it must.
It's a... I don't know. Also, like, I don't know. I thought I had forgotten. I forgot about the car chase. I forgot about the Roxy thing. I forgot about the when they find a wig and a like a spirit Halloween cloak on the
yes.
stairs.
And they're just like, oh, she must have done this.
And ice pick.
Yes.
Well, it was a SFPD coat is what it was supposed to be.
Mm. Okay. Had a hood. Great.
Yeah.
I forgot all about that stuff. And I did think after a certain point, I was like, wow, this is really long. It's like 2 hours, like 2:10 or something like that. But it's, and I was just like, this is, I don't know.
Well, all you need to know from this movie is that Sharon Stone is the puppet master, and Sharon Stone is great. And it's got a really great score, and everything else is window dressing.
So I guess a question would be, Megan, did you enjoy that you watched this movie?
I did. I really did. Except that I wanted to see Michael Douglas get his comeuppance at the end.
If Michael Douglas dies in the next 48 hours, you're going to get investigated.
Oh, I don't want him to die. I don't want him to die. I
want all his characters to die.
His characters to die. Because they always like seem to be like, I mean, Fatal Attraction. I'm still bitter about Fatal Attraction. I just am. And like, yeah, I just kind of like, why are we not treated to seeing him get it? Even though it's a great ending to see the ice pick. But it's like, we all knew this. Come on. At least show us that. I would have wanted to see him realize, oh my God, I was wrong. And I was entranced by the fuck of the century.
I wish that was the real title. Fuck of the century.
The other French title. Oh, I was going to say something else. No, it's completely escaped me.
Does that have to do with the fuck of the century?
Oh, no. Well, the quintessential Michael Douglas movie isn't Wall Street. It's kind of falling down, but the quintessential Michael Douglas movie is War of the Roses, in my opinion.
And I've never seen that one either.
Oh, that needs to be... Wait, what if we do a Michael Douglas series? Once a month, a Michael Douglas movie.
I'll watch a Michael Douglas movie!
War of the Roses is a movie where he plays a schmuck who doesn't know he's a schmuck. And the entire movie is set up because he is a petty, idiotic person.
Okay. And they just, like, hate each other.
They do.
Okay. I would watch it.
It is a fantastic movie. Directed by Danny DeVito.
That's right. Yes. And he's in it, too.
He is.
Megan, if you want to see Michael Douglas be like a real slimy bad guy, a movie that I love, mainly
it's The Game, isn't it? It's The Game.
Well, it's The Game. I love The Game. The Game's great. Yeah, that's an underrated Fincher movie. Yeah.
I've never seen it. I've never seen it.
What the fuck, Megan? you're gonna like love. You're gonna see like the one.
And I'll be like, I love Michael Douglas.
You'll never say that. he did. A movie with Gwyneth Paltrow in 1998.
Perfect Murder,
which is a remake of Dial M for Murder, which oddly, that movie was the reason why I started loving Alfred Hitchcock movies. But that movie has the most insanely ornate kitchen. I was obsessed with the kitchen.
Okay, Nancy Myers.
Like, do you know how much of a faggot that I have to be that in a Hitchcock remake starring Gwyneth Paltrow
pre-Shakespeare in Love.
No, it was post-Shakespeare because that was
I thought it was pre-Shakespeare in Love. Maybe not. Perfect I remember you used to always run around saying, it's not happiness to see me. Remember
it's not happiness to see me, is it?
Yeah.
I feel like probably the kitchen would probably... She gets attacked because her husband wants to kill her for the money. And it's supposed to be Viggo Mortensen. And she defends herself and stabs the guy in the neck with a turkey thermometer. And she's like, and blood is all over. Oh my God, this has to be a new series now. The series that nobody wanted.
Michael Douglas Cinema.
It should be called... Can we make Megan love Michael Douglas? The answer is no.
It could be yes. We don't know. And then we can get him on the podcast to talk to him about. Like,
well, we can get him on the podcast to find out if in the scene, was he practicing for Catherine Zeta-Jones when he went down on Sharon Stone and then later got mouth cancer?
I was just thinking about that. I wanted to ask you if he regrets those comments.
If you ever needed convincing that Michael Douglas is a complete douchebag, the fact that he went public and said, oh, I got mouth cancer because I went down on my wife.
I thought he just said he did it too much to women, period. I thought that was made it even worse.
I don't remember exactly yeah. what the
remember,
statement
he was
was,
a Lothario, wasn't he?
He must have gone to a gay bar that right before that.
And then yeah. he went down on his so leg. Turned on.
So turned on. Now, see, the reason why I think it's a gay bar is because we then see a cowboy bar that no gay person would ever step into. And the reason why I know it's straight people is because there's a woman doing line dancing in a blazer.
Yeah.
I also thought that guy they were with was just gay, too. The one they were doing coke with in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's the gay guy with the coke, partying with the two...
Yeah.
With Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
I've never done coke. I would find coke to sit in a bathroom stall with Sharon Stone.
And Roxy.
Kind of looks a little bit like Miley Cyrus. If you look at her in certain pictures, kind of.
I will say when Roxy first appeared, I was kind of like, is that Sharon Stone? That doesn't look like Sharon Stone. Is this Sharon Stone? So I was like,
where she walks down the stairs.
Yeah. I'm like, she's not Sharon Stone. Okay. But that's part of it. But there I was kind of like doing a double take.
Missed opportunity to have a Candor and Ebb musical number. Roxy. Just bring down the. But my visions are apparently ahead of their time.
Which I can't wait to talk to you about the comeback, Joey.
Oh my God. I was going to do a rewatch and it's been so long since I've seen it. And I've seen so many screen grabs from it. And someone said that they know that the comeback is fiction because no gay person on Broadway would actually be mean to Valerie Cherish.
Well, we can talk about that later. You saw Disclosure, didn't you, Megan?
Yes, I have seen
That's
Disclosure.
That's also like
yes,
the perfect Michael Douglas movie because he's played as, and this is kind of Basic Instinct does this too a little bit, he's played as the hero the entire time until the very end when the real hero emerges as the woman that's been supporting him behind the scenes the entire time.
Wait, who was it? I can't remember.
It was the... It was the Jane Lynch-esque woman, the mannish-esque woman whose kid was the student at Berkeley or wherever, and she's the one that became the CEO in the end.
Oh, I can't even remember. I just remember being like the whole time, like Demi is just like, ugh, like I'm just like, and he's like, I'm a victim.
Do you think when they were having their sex scenes in Disclosure, he'd be like, don't you wish this was Basic Instinct?
But, yeah, so
I would rewatch that again. I would rewatch Disclosure.
Well, we're going to in our new podcast series.
We have to do War of the Roses first.
They have to replace The Bachelor somehow. It's going to be Megan and Michael Douglas.
He's married.
Oh, please. She's probably fine with it.
All right. Well, we can't watch all of Michael Douglas movies. I don't think I've ever seen A Perfect Murder.
It's not
a happiness
great.
To see me.
I want to see if it's streaming on anything. Hold on.
You were obsessed with that trailer.
Because of The Kitchen.
Oh, no, you weren't. You loved that. It's not happiness to see me.
Yeah.
I just remember that was when she had a haircut like Neil Patrick Harris. Like, I remember that was like that sliding.
That's the haircut that she got that whenever the guy turned her around in her chair, I imagine she just started crying.
It was popular at the time, but. It was kind of like that haircut that Scarlett Johansson had in Divorce Story.
Oh, yeah, kind of. I do think
which
that
now
there's
I
a...
think is not a popular haircut. Like that
no,
was just.
I
a
think
flash
it's on. I think it's on Amazon. You can rent it on Amazon. I own a copy because I'm the one loser who has a copy of A Perfect Murder. I was telling Clarence. I'm sorry. I keep sidetracking. Shocking, but there's when I knew Clarence was watching it. A line that stuck out to me from when I was younger, because I was like, oh my God, they can say that, is when they're looking at the murder scene and the guy just offers up, he's like, there are cum stains all over the sheets.
I was laughing at that. I was laughing.
But then like, do you see it? And then Michael Douglas is like,
it.
Good for you.
Well, it's like, because it looks like the you know, it looks like there was an orgy and 15 men came on that bed. There's
a like,
lot.
What's going on?
I was half expecting someone to be like, hey guys, let's bet. Is there more cum or is there more blood? Let's see.
It was, yeah. All right. We are devolving. So in about a month, I guess we'll come back and revisit another entry in the Michael Douglas Ove War of the Roses, which directed by Danny Vito and co-stars Kathleen Turner. All right.
Yes.
And are we going to watch The Roses afterward?
I'm not watching that again.
No. You know what? Then we should watch Romancing the Stone, too.
I just watched that recently, too.
I need to restart it.
It's really not good. I thought it was good back then. Yeah, I don't.
I've heard people who love Romancing the Stone, but they hate War of the Roses. My mom always told me Romancing the Stone is good, War of the Roses isn't. That's what I always thought. Marie, can you confirm this?
Marie, we're going to have to.
I think War of the Roses is a pretty perfect movie.
Okay.
For what it is. The Bald Avenger.
We'll figure this out. I will develop my own idea about it.
Okay. Very good. So let's jump to the flash forward to the media you're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Megan, why don't you go first?
Well, okay. I'm watching The Pit, of course. And I really need to see Project Hail Mary. I don't know when I'm going to see it, but also Robin's new album is coming out. So that is pretty much going to dominate my life. I'm reading the book The Dirt about Motley Crue, and I think it's one of the greatest books I've ever read. It's so horrifying and disgusting, and I can't look away. And I'm just watching, trying to catch up on shows. I finished Ted season 2. There's a lot of good TV. I need to watch that show with Rachel Weisz. That's like on my list of things to watch. I still haven't watched it. But that's about it.
Joey.
Vladimir with my friend Leah Woodall. Call me.
Yeah.
I'm finishing Tim Curry's memoir, which I could not get into at first. I felt really bad because he was just like, bad gay. Well, no, he's like, this book will not be salacious. I grew up in England. I had a mother. I had a father. I had a sister. And I was like, where are the movies? I was like, but I'm barreling through it now. I think the next book it'll be gay. I don't know what I'm gonna read yet. Isn't this exciting how I'm describing it? I think the show, I'm looking forward to see what happens on Drag Race this week, because I like the season a lot and I want to see who's going to end up in the finale of this week's episode. I think I'll watch that Michelle Pfeiffer show because of Michelle Pfeiffer.
Right, yeah.
Which I'm just calling the Michelle Pfeiffer is sad in the Wild Wild West. That's what I'm calling it.
Wicca Wicca Wow.
What?
Wicca Wicca Wow. Wow.
I hate you. I have a long list of television to watch, so I'm excited to get on that. That's it.
I too need to see Project Hail Mary. On the television front, we are halfway through a Love Story. So
I need to get back on that too.
I just finished the episode that is Jackie O passes.
Here's your Emmy, Naomi Watts. Here is your Emmy.
That performance, if you imagine a tightrope above a giant chasm, that performance is walking that thing confidently, but yes. Is it good? Is it bad? I don't know.
It's good. I love it.
It's so campy though. Like it is so camp when she's dancing with John F. Kennedy's picture to Camelot.
I love every second of it.
Dying words are basically, there will never be another Camelot.
No, but when she says, like, tell him I forgive him, and they're like, who? And she's like, God. I was like, God.
I think, and underneath that tightrope is Natalie Portman with a gun.
Her performance owes a tremendous amount to Natalie Portman. I'll just put that out there.
I've never seen Jackie either, so.
You are fucking killing me. This
list is so long.
I've seen Clifford a million times, so
time wasted. What else? Parks and Rec every now and again. And I've got 7 episodes of Hacks, the final season, getting into that, loving The Pit. Last every episode, I feel like this season has been a gradual, it's been a marathon season. It is getting better and better and better. And every episode is like, oh my God, that's the best episode of the season. No, this one is the best episode of the season. That poor woman that died of cancer. Oh God, that was heartbreaking.
I know.
Just I know. Such a fantastic show. I will not entertain people who say that this season isn't as good as the first season. It absolutely is. No,
they're
is.
Fucking insane.
They're completely insane.
And I think on the book front, still reading, well, I haven't really got to Wuthering Heights yet. It is right on this bedside table. But I'm listening to the audiobook My Husband's Wife by Alice Feeney. And it's actually an incredibly good book. It's very fun. It would make a great movie. And there's a character in there who is a British, tall, dark-headed, very handsome, dark-eyed cop, young cop. And if that character is not played by Jacob Elordi in the inevitable movie, then I will fire Hollywood.
The whole thing.
The whole thing. Cancel all of Hollywood. Sorry, goodbye. We're done. All right, does that cover it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. Thank you for entertaining us as we revisited Basic Instinct. And make sure you come back in a month. Of course, listen to us every week, but come back in a month for the next in what has become not the Megan's Never Seen Films / Michael Douglas movies. And
love Michael Douglas. That's
possible. I don't think it's possible.
It could be. We don't know this.
We'll find out at the end of this journey.
Yes.
Hopefully we finish the journey instead of the Motivar Film Festival. Okay. That's a deep cut for the listeners. All right. So we are the 3Ms, contending co-founders Clarence Moy, Joey Moser, and Megan McLaughlin. Thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or click like and subscribe here on YouTube, and wishing you all a very pleasant tomorrow.